be another Carolyn, and not just because she was dead. That part of me was dead, too. The talk moved on to safer areas, a movie everybody but Franklin had hated. I pretended to follow it. Meanwhile, my mind went round and round the suicide track. It never seems to surface while I'm jacked. Maybe the army knows all about it and has a way of suppressing it. I know I'm suppressing it myself. Even Candy only had a hint. But I can't keep this up for 5 more years, all the killing and dying. And the war's not going to end. When I feel this way, I don't feel sad. It's not loss, but escape. It's not whether, but when and how. I guess after I lose Amelia is the when. The only how that appeals to me is to do it while jacked. Maybe take a couple of generals with me. I can save the actual planning for the moment, but I do know where the generals live in Portobello, Building 31. And with all my years jacked, it's nothing to slide a comm thread to the soldier boys who guard the building. There are ways I can divert them for a fraction of a second. Try not to kill any shoes on my way in.
Yoo-hoo! Julian, anybody home?
It was Reza from the other table. Sorry. Thinking.
Well, come over here and think. We have a physics question that Blaze can't answer.
I picked up my drink and moved over. Not particle, then?
No, it's simpler than that. Why does water emptying out of a tub go one direction in the northern hemisphere and the other in the southern?
I looked at Amelia, and she nodded seriously. She knew the answer, and Reza probably did, too. They were rescuing me from the war talk.
Well, that's easy. Water molecules are magnetized. They always point north or south.
Nonsense, Belda said. Even I would know it if water were magnetized.
Now, the truth is, it's an old wives' tale. You'll excuse the expression.
I'm an old widow, Belda said.
Water goes one way or the other, depending on the size and shape of the tub and peculiarities of the surface near the outlet. People go through life believing the hemisphere thing without noticing that some of the basins in their own house go the wrong way.
I must go home and check,
Belda said. She drained her glass and unfolded slowly out of the chair.
You children be good.
She went to say goodbye to the others. Reza smiled at her back.
She thought you looked lonely there.
Sad, Amelia said. I did too. Such a horrible experience, and here we are bringing it up all over.
It's not something they covered in training. I mean, in a way they do. You get jacked to strings recorded while people died, first in a light jack and then deeper.
Some jack freaks do it for fun, Reza said.
Yeah, well, they can have my job.
I've seen that billboard.
Amelia hugged herself.
Strings of people dying in racing accidents. Executions.
The under-the-counter ones are worse. Ref had tried a couple, so I'd felt them secondhand. Our backups who died, their strings are probably on the market by now.
The government can't.
Oh, the government loves it, Reza broke in. They probably have some recruitment division that makes sure the stores are full of snuff strings.
I don't know, I said.
Army's not wild about people who are already jacked.
Ralph was,
Amelia said. He had other virtues. They'd rather have you associate the specialness of being jacked with being in the army.
Sounds really special, Reza said. Somebody dies and you feel his pain? I'd rather...
You don't understand, Rez. You get larger, in a way, when somebody dies. You share it, and... The memory of Carolyn suddenly hit me hard.
Well, it makes your own death less earth-shaking. Someday you'll buy it,
Big deal. You live on? I mean, they live on in you?
Some do, some don't.
You've met people you'd never want to carry around in your head. Those guys die the day they die.
But you'll have Carolyn forever, Amelia said.
I paused a little too long. Of course, and after I die, the people who've been Jack to me will remember her, too, and pass her down.
I wish you wouldn't talk like that, Amelia said.
Rez, who had known for years that we were together, nodded.
It's like a boil you keep picking at, like you were getting ready to die all the time.
I almost lost it. I literally counted to 10. Rez opened his mouth, but I interrupted.
Would you rather I just watched people die, felt them die, and came home asking, "What's for dinner?"
I dropped to a whisper.
How would you feel about me if that didn't hurt me?
I'm sorry.
Don't. I'm sorry you lost a baby, but that's not what you are. We go through these things, and then we more or less absorb them, and we become whatever we are becoming.
Julian,
Reza said in a warning tone,
perhaps you ought to save this for later.
That's a good idea, Amelia said, rising. I have to go on home anyhow.
She signaled the wheelie, and it went for her coat and bag.
Share a cab?
I asked.
It's not necessary,
she said in a neutral tone.
End of the month.
She could use leftover entertainment points for a cab ride. Other people didn't have points left over, so I bought a lot of wine and beer and whiskey, and drank more than my share. Reza did, too. His car wouldn't let him drive. He came along with me in my two bodyguard shoes. I had them drop me at the campus gate and walked the 2 kilometers to Amelia's through a cool mist of rain. No sign of any newsies. All the lights were out. It was almost 2. I let myself in through the back and belatedly thought I should have buzzed. What if she wasn't alone? I turned on the kitchen light and harvested cheese and grape juice from the refrigerator. She heard me moving around and shuffled in, rubbing her eyes.
No reporters? I asked.
They're all under the bed.
She stood behind me and put her hands on my shoulders.
Give them something to write about?
I turned around in the chair and buried my face between her breasts. Her skin had a warm, sleepy smell.
I'm sorry about earlier.
You've been through too much. Come on.
I let her lead me into the bedroom, and she undressed me like a child. I was still a little drunk, but she had ways of getting around that. Mostly patience, but other things, too. I slept like a creature, stunned, and woke to an empty house. She'd left a note on the microwave that said she had a sequence scheduled at 8:45 and would see me at the lunch group meeting. It was after 10. A Saturday meeting. Science never sleeps. I found some clean clothes in my drawer and took a quick shower. The day before I went back to Portobello, I had an appointment with the Luxury Allocation Board in Dallas, the people who handle special requests for the Nano Forge. I took the triangle monorail, and so got a glimpse of Fort Worth streaming by. I'd never gotten off there. It was a half hour to Dallas, but then another hour crawling through traffic out to the lab, which took up a huge piece of land outside the city limits. They had 16 Nano Forges, and hundreds of tanks and vats and bins that held the raw materials and the various nanos that put them together in millions of ways. I didn't have time to walk around, but had taken a guided tour of the place with Reza and his friend the year before. That's when I got the idea to get something special for Amelia. We didn't do birthdays or religious holidays, but next week was the 2nd anniversary of the first time we were intimate. I don't keep a diary, but could trace the date down through lab reports. We both
missed the next day's sequence. The evaluator assigned to my request was a sour-faced man about 50. He read the form with a fixed, glum expression.
"You don't want this piece of jewelry for yourself. This is for some woman, some lover?"
"Yes, of course."
"I'll have to have her name, then."
I hesitated. "She's not exactly my..."
"I don't care about your relationship. Just have to know who will eventually own this object, if I should approve it."
I wasn't enthusiastic about having our relationship officially documented. Of course, anyone who tapped me with a deep jack would know about it, so it was only as secret as anything in my life was secret. "It's for Amelia Blaze Harding," I said. "A co-worker." He wrote that down.
"She also lives at the university?"
"That's right."
"Same address?"
"No, I'm not sure what her address is."
"We'll find it."
He smiled like a man who had sucked on a lemon and tried to smile.
"I see no reason to disapprove your request."
A printer in his desk hissed and a piece of paper flipped up in front of me.
"That will be 53 utility credits," he said. "If you sign here, the finished piece should be available at Unit 6 within half an hour."
I signed. More than a month's worth of credits for a handful of sand, transformed, was one way to think of it. Or 53 worthless government counters for a thing of beauty that would have been literally beyond price a generation ago. I went out into the corridor and followed a purple line that led to units 1 through 8. That split, and I followed a red line to units 5 through 8. Door after door concealing people who sat at desks, slowly doing work that machines could have done better and faster. But machines had no use for extra utility and entertainment credits. I went through a revolving door into a pleasant rotunda built around a rock garden. A thin silvery stream fell and washed through it, splashing among exotic tropical plants that grew out of a gravel of rubies, diamonds, emeralds, and dozens of glittering stones with no common names. I checked at the Unit 6 counter, and it said I still had a half-hour wait. There was a cafe, though, with tables ringed around half the rock garden. I produced my military ID and got a cold beer. At the table where I sat, somebody had left a folded-up copy of the Mexican magazine Sexo, so I spent the half-hour improving my language skills. A card on the table explained that the gems were specimens rejected for aesthetic or structural flaws. They were nevertheless well out of reach. The desk announced my name, and I went over and picked up a small white package. I unwrapped it carefully. It was exactly what I had ordered, but seemed more dramatic than its picture. A gold chain necklace supporting a dark green nightstone, inside a halo of small rubies. The nightstones had only been around for a few months. This one looked like a small egg of onyx that somehow had a green light embedded. As you turned it, the green changed shape, square to diamond to cross. It would look good on her delicate skin, the red and green echoing her hair and eyes. I hoped it wouldn't be too exotic for her to wear. On the train ride back, I showed it to a woman who sat next to me. She said it was pretty, but, in her opinion, was too dark for a black woman's skin. I told her I'd have to think about that. I left it on Amelia's dresser, along with a note reminding her it was 2 years, and went on to Portobello. Julian was born in a university town and grew up surrounded by white people who weren't overtly racist. There were race riots in places like Detroit and Miami, but people treated them as urban problems, far removed from their comfortable reality. That was close to the truth. But the Nagumi War was changing white America's feelings about race. or, cynics maintained, allowing them to express their true feelings.